The Hand of Ethelberta by Thomas Hardy. Chapter 1. A Street in Anglebury, A Heath Near It, Inside the Red Lion Inn. Young Mrs. Pethelwyn stepped from the door of an old and well-appointed inn in a Wessex town to take a country walk. By her look and carriage she appeared to belong to that gentle order of society which has no worldly sorrow except when its jewellery gets stolen. But, as a fact not generally known, her claim to distinction was rather one of brains than of blood. She was the daughter of a gentleman who lived in a large house not his own, and began life as a baby christened Ethelberta, after an infant of title who does not come into the story at all, having merely furnished Ethelberta's mother with a subject of contemplation. She became teacher in a school, was praised by examiners, admired by gentlemen, not admired by gentlewomen, was touched up with accomplishments by masters who were coaxed into painstaking by her many graces, and, entering a mansion as governess to the daughter thereof, was stealthily married by the son. He, a minor like herself, died from a chill caught during the wedding tour, and a few weeks later was followed into the grave by Sir Ralph Pethelwyn, his unforgiving father, who had bequeathed his wealth to his wife absolutely. These calamities were a sufficient reason to Lady Pethelwyn for pardoning all concerned. She took by the hand the forlorn Ethelberta, who seemed rather a detached bride than a widow, and finished her education by placing her for 2 or 3 years in a boarding school at Bonn. Latterly she had brought the girl to England to live under her roof as daughter and companion, the condition attached being that Ethelberta was never openly to recognise her relations, for reasons which will hereafter appear. The elegant young lady, as she had a full right to be called, if she cared for the definition, arrested all the local attention when she emerged into the summer evening light, with that diadem and sceptre bearing, many people, for reasons of heredity, discovering such graces only in those whose vestibules are lined with ancestral mail, forgetting that a bear may be taught to dance. While this air of hers lasted, even the inanimate objects in the street appeared to know that she was there. But from a way she had of carelessly overthrowing her dignity by versatile moods, one could not calculate upon its presence to a certainty when she was round corners or in little lanes which demanded no repression of animal spirits. "Well, to be sure," exclaimed a milkman, regarding her, "we should freeze in our beds if 'twere not for the sun, and dang me if she isn't a pretty piece. A man could make a meal between them eyes and chin, eh, ostler? Old nations dang my old sides if he couldn't." The speaker, who had been carrying a pair of pails on a yoke, deposited them upon the edge of the pavement in front of the inn, and straightened his back to an excruciating perpendicular. His remarks had been addressed to a rickety person wearing a waistcoat of that preternatural length from the top to the bottom button which prevails among men who have to do with horses. He was sweeping straws from the carriageway beneath the stone arch that formed a passage to the stables behind.
"Never mind the cursing and swearing, or somebody who's never out of hearing may clap our name down in his black book," said the hostler, also pausing and lifting his eyes to the mullioned and transomed windows and moulded parapet above him, not to study them as features of ancient architecture, but just to give as healthful a stretch to the eyes as his acquaintance had done to his back.
"Michael, an old man like you ought to think about other things, and not be looking two ways at your time of life. Pouncing upon young flesh like a carrion crow, 'tis a vile thing in an old man."
"Oh, 'tis, and yet 'tis not. 'Tis a natural taste,"
said the milkman, again surveying Ethelberta, who had now paused upon a bridge in full view to look down the river.
"Now if a poor needy fellow like myself could only catch her alone when she's dressed up to the nines for some grand party, and carry her off to some lonely place, sakes, what a pot of jewels and gold things, I warrant, he'll find about her! 'Twould pay en for his trouble."
"I don't dispute the picture, but 'tis sly and untimely to think such roguery. Though I'd have had thoughts like it, 'tis true, about highwaymen. Lord forgive me for it.
And that figure of fashion standing there is a widow woman, so I hear."
"Lady, not a penny less than lady. Ay, a thing of 21 or thereabouts."
"A widow lady in 21. 'Tis a backward age for a body who's so forward in her state of life."
"Well, be that as 'twill, here's my showings for her age. She was about the figure of..."